This is Dr. Laura Calkins of the Vietnam Archive at Texas Tech University, conducting an oral history interview with Mr. Robert Taylor Ray. Today's date is the 24th of June, 2005. I am on the campus of Texas Tech in the Special Collections Building in Lubbock, Texas, and Robert is speaking to me by telephone from the North Dallas area. Is that correct, sir?
North Fort Worth.
North Fort Worth. Thank you. And good morning, and thank you for participating, Robert. I appreciate this very much. Robert, could you tell us where you were born and when?
I was born at Cookeville, Tennessee, 80 miles east of Nashville, on August 27, 1922.
And did you grow up in that area?
Yes, I did, on a small farm about a mile outside of town.
Were you able to attend schools?
Yes, I was. I attended city school at Cookeville, Tennessee, where I was an honor graduate, and then I attended Central High School, where I was also an honor graduate.
And what year did you graduate?
1940.
Were you much for sports while you were in high school?
Only in track.
That's pretty good. What did you run?
Yes,
jump?
I ran distance.
Oh, okay. And so you must have been in pretty good shape in 1940 then.
Yes.
When did you enter the military service, Robert?
I was sworn into the Navy in November of 1942.
Now, in between there, of course,
I was enrolled at Tennessee Tech University as an engineering student.
And what kind of engineering were you studying?
Mechanical.
Did you enjoy that, Robert?
Yes.
How did you, well, first let me ask about Pearl Harbor. Do you remember that?
Very well.
What were you doing that day?
Well, I was a member of the Tennessee State Guard, and we were, that was on a Sunday, and we were having drill, and one of the officers came out and announced to us that Pearl Harbor had been attacked.
And how did you feel? Do you remember?
No, I don't, really.
Do you remember how other people kind of acted? Were people upset or enraged?
The young men around me were somewhat surprised and also angered that the Japanese would do this.
Yes, sir. And did that motivate you to leave college, or how did you come to actually leave
no,
the university?
No, it was through the Navy V-12 program that I entered the service. The Navy V-12 program took in 125,000 junior and senior students from universities and colleges across America, and it provided the Navy with a steady supply of young officers in that it allowed you to continue your college work, and on graduation you would go to officer training,
which, sir,
I did.
And so you then entered the Navy full-time in 1942?
I was called to active duty in May of 1943 when I began my senior year at the University of Louisville, Kentucky.
And were you continuing then with your engineering studies?
Yes, I continued and completed my 4 years of engineering studies.
Did you graduate then from Louisville?
No, I transferred credits back to Tennessee Tech University, and I graduated from there in absentia.
And was that then in 1943?
Yes.
Or, okay.
Well, no, actually early 1944.
Okay. We'll just get those details correct.
Yes.
Now, let me ask you about your active duty service in the Navy. Where were you trained? Did you go to some kind of
I was trained at several places. From Louisville, I went to Asbury Park, New Jersey for 4 months, and then I went to Midshipman School in Chicago for 4 months, and I was in a class of 1,225 college men, and I graduated number 8 in a class of 1,225 men from 145 universities and colleges. And from there, I went into submarine training.
Now, did you select submarine training?
Yes, it was kind of exclusive. In fact, it they announced when they came to the midshipman school, unless you're in the top one-third of the class, don't even bother to apply. We don't want you.
Wow.
And I was given some psychiatric as well as physical examination to see if I were suited for submarine duty, which is very different from all other.
Yeah, Robert, as a matter of interest, do you remember any of those tests? I know the physical ones were fairly common, but these tests for the early submarine classes were different.
Well, no, I'm sorry, but I don't remember any details.
That's okay. But certainly you easily cleared the hurdle.
Yes, I did.
To enter submarine work.
Now, yes.
What particular job were you going to be trained for on the sub?
I could have been assigned to any duty on a submarine, but I was assigned to engineering division on the submarine.
Now, did that mean you were in charge of propulsion systems as well as the other internal systems?
I was assistant engineering officer and then later became the engineering officer, and it had to do with all propulsion systems and also some other systems, electric and pumps and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The principal duties of engineering were with the propulsion systems.
Now, Robert, what was the first sub that you were on, and where were you?
I first was at San Diego, California,
mm-hmm.
for 4 months in Submarine Squadron 45, which was a training squadron using what were known as S-boats. These old submarines were built and bought by the U.S. Navy from 1918 to 1924. Some 50 of them were purchased by the Navy,
mm-hmm.
and they were used for training purposes. At the very first of the war, some of them were assigned combat duties, but they were obsolete and they were dangerous. And one of our officers served on one up in the Aleutian Islands where the water was so very, very cold and all, and
mm-hmm.
he told us stories of the many problems they had. But then after the 4 months in Squadron 45, then I went to 4 months of submarine school at New London, Connecticut, and I graduated there as an honor student and was assigned to a submarine division, number 342, in the Western Pacific, and that was where I was serving when I was assigned to USS Haddo, what I would consider my ship, my submarine.
When did you actually join the Haddo, and where?
I joined it at Guam,
mm-hmm.
for around 1st of August, 1945. I made one patrol on it.
Did you have a sense at that point that the war was likely to continue?
Well, from intelligence reports, which came to every commanding officer of a submarine in the fleet, it indicated that the Japanese were greatly weakened and were having great difficulty obtaining oil to run their war machine.
Mm-hmm.
They did not have oil production on their home islands, and it had to come from Southeast Asia, and our submarines sank so many of their tankers
mm-hmm.
that they were literally starving for oil.
So you knew they were certainly in trouble on that score.
Yes, and so many of their surface ships, even those carrying other supplies than oil, were sunk. Submarines represented less than 2% of the Navy in number of people, and yet they sank over 50% of all Japanese vessels that were sunk.
Now, Robert, who was the commander of the ship when you joined?
Frank Lynch.
How do you spell his last name?
Lynch.
Do you remember much about him?
Yes. He was a man that was 6 feet and 3 or 4 inches tall,
mm-hmm.
he had been an outstanding graduate of his class of 1938 at the Naval Academy at Annapolis.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember the title given at West Point in the Army. It's called Cadet Corps Commander. But anyhow, he was honored as the top student in his graduating class.
Wow. So what kind of a man was he?
He was a very capable officer in every way.
Do you know where he was from?
I believe he was from Missouri.
Okay. Tell me about your... You mentioned that you went on one patrol.
Yes.
Please tell me how that began and what the mission was.
Well, after the submarine had been refitted and resupplied at Guam, then this 10th and last war patrol began, and we received a radio message that after we had been at sea a little while, mm-hmm. on our travel up to an assigned patrol zone off the coast of Japan,
mm-hmm.
while we received the word that the nuclear bomb had been dropped on Japan. And then, of course, we continued and reached our patrol station, which was 150 miles north of Tokyo and 75 miles off the coast. That's the east coast, of course.
Yes.
By that time, one of the main jobs of submarines was doing lifeguard duty for the hundreds of B-29s that were bombing Japan. And when they had to make forced landings, submarines that were nearby acted as lifeguards or were saving them from... Sometimes they bailed out mm-hmm. with parachutes, and sometimes they were able to even to launch rubber valves. But mm-hmm. anyhow, a lot of submarine duties consisted of lifeguard duty, since so many of the Japanese ships had been destroyed that about the only thing they had left was small coastal ships.
Yes, sir.
And that stayed very close in and were dangerous to try to close to destroy.
And did your ship pick up any?
Not while I was on it. It had previously.
Mm-hmm.
I served on a refit crew at Guam before coming on board Haddo
mm-hmm.
on the Devilfish, and they had just come off patrol with a young man that was a fighter pilot, and he had been rescued when his fighter plane received anti-aircraft damage, and it didn't actually knock the plane out of the air. What it did was cut a hole in the oil cooler, and he saw that oil pressure was being lost on his engine, and he knew it would soon lock up. So he headed out over the coast and out to sea,
mm-hmm.
and then he finally ditched and had a little rubber raft that he was in, and he was there that the Devilfish picked him up, as had happened to many, many other airmen.
Yes, sir. Did you make his acquaintance?
Slightly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you remember his name at all?
No, I do not. There were, on Guam alone, there were 175 B-29s.
Yes, sir.
Over on the other Mariana Islands, Saipan and Tinian, there were also many B-29s. So as we were on patrol station before the war ended and seeing them fly overhead, it seemed that... like the sky was turned to aluminum. They were coming over just by the scores going in to bomb Japan. Excuse me.